Welcome, dear seekers of health, happiness, and harmonious cosmic humming, to season two of The Pebble in the Cosmic Pond. I am Sabina Vibes, owner of Happy Goat Productions, in collaboration with Leo Locke, our self-proclaimed purveyor of multiple perspectives. We are here to bring you old and new stories about China's healing traditions and about medicine in heaven and on earth, and in the sweet spot in between. In our season two, titled Over the Moon, we feature the voices of second-generation immigrant Asian women on female health. We explore the creative sweet spot in between the traditional Asian kitchen table wisdom that these women have inherited from their mothers and aunties, and their personal and professional experiences in contemporary North America. In this episode two on attuning and releasing, we continue our conversation with Ramona Dionoth, a Chinese medicine practitioner of Indian heritage in San Diego, who is finishing up a doctoral dissertation on menstrual education at Yosan University in LA, which is just amazingly cool. Her work is so wonderful. So I'm so glad to feature her as our first interviewee for this new season. So in this episode, we get to dig a little deeper into current menstrual education in the US with Ramona's help. What are some missing pieces that traditional Asian cultural and medical paradigms might be able to provide? What is the effect of non-existent or harmful information on menstruation, not just for menstruators, but for their family members, their partners, and for society at large? How can we celebrate and elevate currently emerging young women's intuitive voices and cross-cultural universal experiences to fundamentally change the way in which especially young women experience menstruation in a positive direction? And on the other side, how can we address and prevent, instead of normalize, menstrual pain and provide much needed medical, emotional, and social support? We walk away from this conversation with Ramona's insistence that menstrual education must be improved for all humans, not just for women. And Leo's teaser at the end for a future session that fertility is not an on or off switch. Before we get into the conversation, I'd like to remind you to check out the show notes, where you find links to sign up for my newsletter at happygoatproductions.com/connect. Learn more at traditionalchinesegynecology.com. Purchase my books, Channeling the Moon, Parts 1 and 2 on Traditional Chinese Gynecology, and to Leo's courses. And you can learn more about Ramona. And lastly, please rate, review, and share this podcast wherever you can. We do want this message about women's health to get out there, and we hope that you can help us make that happen by spreading it to the general public. Thank you so much. Bye. All right, you guys, hold on, we're recording. Ramona, you just shared this beautiful story about one of your interviewees saying that she was just releasing. And Leo had a follow-up, or whoever wants to jump in here. Leo, you had a follow-up story on that.
So should we remind our audience what the story is? Maybe Ramona can retell it
quickly,
a little bit.
Quickly touch base. So in my interviews, I ask the question of why do we menstruate? What is the point of menstruation? And this young lady answered in the sense of It's releasing what I've held on to for the month. It's releasing my emotions. Mm-hmm. It's giving me a fresh, clean start. And she talked about how she looks forward to having it because it gives you that opportunity to release anything from the previous month and have a fresh start. And so I thought that was such a beautiful answer.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that beautiful as well, because this young lady most likely didn't get any professional medical education from the Chinese medicine side or the Ayurvedic Indic side, but just through her own intuition, she tapped into this universal phenomenon that both the Chinese traditional medicine and the Indian traditional medicine have touched upon. Right, I was just watching a YouTube short recently on this a very eloquent young lady from India. You know, she's into history, she's into the history of colonization. And then she said something really interesting that I just learned from her. She said, you know, one of the possible reasons why in ancient India, or pre-modern India, they did not allow menstruating women to go into temple. It's not because menstruation itself is unclean. It is because of this concept of energy movement in the Indic system, which is very similar to the Chinese system.
Mm-hmm.
She says there is this concept of energy moving up, energy moving down. So the moving energy down is the energy moving down is called apana, right? Which actually the Chinese through Buddhism actually absorbed that concept as well. But in Chinese medicine, we have the same concept of energy moving down. So menstruation, bleeding, is the body energy moving down, cleaning and getting rid of things that should be getting rid of so that a woman's body can rejuvenate herself. But a temple and a holy place is where you go in and the feel of the place move your energy up, uddana, instead of apana. So it is for the well-being of the women to not go into the temple where her energy will be raised up when it should be going down for cleansing and rejuvenation. And I said, whoa, that's so interesting, because in Chinese medicine, we have the same concept. In the herbalist tradition, we have the idea of a formulas that should be administered when the blood of the women goes upward and go into a counterflow towards the head, and she goes crazy, right? Mm-hmm. She will exhibit this incredible, unstable emotional patterns and upheaval is because if she get contracted with a cold or something, then her energy starts moving up and out. So that's the time we have to harmonize and redirect the flow in the body. I said, wow, that's so compatible with what the Indic system is saying about the uddana, the energy going up and the energy going down. So that's where I think I so appreciate these young people from India right now. It is so courageous and so unapologetic in advancing their ancestral and traditional values and wisdom to the world without being censored. And now we get to benefit from their courage and their sharing. So that's why I thought your example of this young lady's own intuition is so beautiful, because it's so intuitive. And this intuition, this women's intuition, is universal.
That's beautiful.
Mm.
It's cross-cultural.
Yeah, thank you, Leo. It's so, you know, Leo, it's so rare. And that's why I'm so excited about your project, Ramona. It's just, to me, it's so rare to find conversations about menstruation that go in, and I don't know how to, what was just so special about your statement, Leo, but there was something where it was, on the one hand, it was rooted in, it strikes me as, it makes sense from a Chinese medicine perspective, and it's like, you can call it classical, whatever, it makes sense. I have my head in the texts all the time. People make up all this stuff in order to try and modernize or to bring Chinese medicine into the, you know, context of global medicine and American context and, you know, feminism and all of the stuff. And sometimes people make stuff up and I'm like, no, this just doesn't fit. Whereas what you're saying, it's just like, yes, this is, I know it's, this is authentic is such a big word, but it just makes sense. And it's really hard to find those voice, those descriptions, because menstruation is a women's experience. And most of Chinese medicine, until not too long ago, the vast majority was written by men. And so much of that experiential dimension of menstruation is not accessible to male authors who, you know, if they only got the pulse or whatever, it's like there's this separation based on the gender dimension, and we are in a different world now.
Yes,
I feel, and that's like... why Ramona, that's where you come in with your project.
I feel like, you know, what is happening now is giving menstruators the opportunity to not necessarily rewrite, but add in those pieces, because a lot of the authors of our past are male, and it gives us an opportunity to put in those little tidbits of our own personal experiences within our generations and share what we're truly experiencing, like releasing what we've been holding on to for the month, or, you know, allowing those emotions to flow. I feel like those things weren't really talked about before in the texts, and it's really important right now to honor all these words and honor all the feelings that our body is actually going through and validating it, you know?
Yeah. I would say we can go further than that. I would say that just by adding the tidbits of the female experience or experiential findings shouldn't just be limited to adding on to the framework, but it could be louder and more prominent. Yeah, because the phenomenon and the suffering of menstruation is exclusively to the female bodies. And I think women have the rights and the responsibility, actually, to speak more deeply and broadly and in much more detail about this experience, so to educate all the medical professionals and everybody in the world out there, especially men, the male bodies. So I would say it needs to be a much bigger voice, a much more confident voice, not in anger, not in frustration, but more of so that we can bring the world into balance, so that women don't have to suffer in silence and being misunderstood.
I think this is where, you know, the normalization the taboo, the stigma, all of those things need to be addressed. You know, we need to
transformed.
Yes, absolutely. Mm. You know, how pain is being normalized, and
yes,
there's no proper scale of pain, and we don't know how extreme pain can be, and what pain is actually really indicating, and how a lot of professionals are saying, "Oh, that's normal. That's normal." Just, you know, or even your parents telling you.
I think the pain piece was when I first came to America, when I was 18, 19, whatever, 20, whatever it was. That was the piece that really struck me as different, that in America, and maybe by now it's the same in Germany, and maybe this was just my, I mean, I can't decipher how much of it was just my personal experience coming from my particular German family, coming to America on my own. But what struck me is that in America, menstrual pain is considered normal. And it is normal for American girls, or when my daughter started menstruating and her friends, it is normal. Doctors consider it normal that girls have pain, that girls experience pain, and you just take your Tylenol. And if you're, you know, if once a month you don't go to school for a day or two, that's normal in America. And to me, that was just like, what? That really struck me as that's really upsetting to me, because in Chinese medicine, you have the tools to deal with that pain like you did with your patient and transform what's called the curse, this profoundly destabilizing, weakening, really pretty traumatic experience for a lot of young girls are, you know, and then they just put them on the pill, and then they just take the pill so that they never menstruate continuously. Like, that's something that I did not get growing up in Germany. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong here, that's a particular American, or maybe it's a particular modern biomedical thing. Ramona, what about what your mom taught you?
Oh, it was such a beautiful experience. My mom did good. I give her a lot of props. She held my hand. It was, you know, as menstruators, we never forget the first time and where we were in that first experience, and, you know, the deer in headlights, like, what just happened? But, you know, my mom walked me through every aspect of what to expect, and she was so helpful, and I'm so grateful that I had that experience, and she made everything that I felt feel normal. She didn't brush anything that I described to her under the table. She just completely supported me. And so when I hear other young menstruators talk about their initial experience and how sometimes that support that we oftentimes should be getting is not there, then it's like, let me answer all the questions that you have, because I want, you know, I want to be as supportive. And I think that's where the caregiver in me comes into play. But it was truly a beautiful experience. And so I think that's why I ended up on this road, now that I think of it, because of how wonderfully foundational those initial experiences were. They were scary, which is normal, but I was very well supported.
I hope your mom, I hope we figure out what to do with this episode so that you can send it to your mom. As a mom myself, it's like, there's no more special thing to hear out of a daughter's mouth than that.
Yes, the support.
And a lot of times I think we minimize that support, the value of that support, especially men who cannot relate to that. And I think as a movement and as an effort, we need to come up with many more examples to illustrate the value of those education and those comfort to men who may not be able to understand the impact from those illustrations, right? For example, to follow up on Sabina's sympathy for the young women or young menstruators, it's not just the young people, it's what they become young mothers, when they become young mothers and wives, what kind of stability they can bring to the family life if their menstrual health is normal versus they curl into these curveballs of excruciating pain and all for a week or several days every month, or they explode into this unimaginable and hard to understand mood swings. You know, many of my patients would say, oh, my mom or my wife is such a beautiful and nice person, and then she would become a different person around her menstruation. So from the Chinese medical standpoint, that is kind of unnecessary. If she had good care and proper care,
yes,
most of these symptoms can be ameliorated or completely taken care of. So to the male audience out there, you know, or to the male in the world, what, you know, males like numbers. So what is the economic value of this stability? So that would be if you're somebody, a family who is earning $80,000 a year or $100,000 a year, what is the money value of a family life that does not go up into upheaval every 25 days? So sometimes I wonder, why is it that we're not talking about that from that perspective, because that would be something that many male audience would understand immediately. I was like, wow, I would pay this much just to have a stable family life that doesn't drive me crazy every month.
I think people know. I think, because it is such a common theme. I mean, I don't watch TV anymore. My daughter doesn't live with me anymore. But when my daughter was starting to menstruate, and the messages, and she is American because she was born and raised in America, and I am German, and there's a huge difference in the way she experiences a lot of things, and that's it's challenging. It's really hard. All these jokes and I don't know if people even watch TV anymore, or we're young people. I don't know where they now. Yeah, Ramona, fill us in on this. But there,
TikTok. TikTok this, and Instagram.
This joke, like guys joke about their girlfriends and partners being on their period and turning vicious and whatever, and it's not funny. It really, it's like it's accepted in our culture. And Leo, you just said it so beautifully. It's like, all we'd have to do is send them to a good acupuncturist or an herbalist or even give them dietetic advice. It's not rocket science to address the symptoms that show up around the menstrual cycle and make them go away in a vast majority of cases, right? Or at least vastly improve them. Like, to me, Chinese medicine has so many tools, and I think it's just that our culture accepts it as normal. Which is, I think that's, Leo, that's where we, that's where we started this whole conversation with, is just having a, that there's a need to just raise awareness of the fact that this is not normal and it is not the way a woman should experience her reproductive health. Yeah, Ramona?
This goes back to education. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's a real big importance in terms of making sure males are just as educated as females. You know, get those giggles out of the way and really help all genders really understand what our body is capable of, because a lot of education, a lot of what's going on in public health education, it's not including the opposite gender as well, or all genders, let's just say, as well, so that we truly understand what is going on with the body and making things feel normal when we have those feelings, or when we're experiencing X, Y, and Z during those certain little times of the month. You know, I just feel like there's such a huge importance on making sure everybody is educated, and it's not happening from what I'm finding out and what I have found out. You know, they still do things like separate boys and girls. You know, they still do things like that where they're only covering this and only covering that with the guys and the girls. And so it's just, it's hard to hear that that's still happening, and that education in some cases are happening at a certain age, but then not happening again until they're what, ready to have kids maybe? Who knows? But the education can be so small, and that's where we are missing. We are missing a lot of that information, or misinformation.
And sometimes I wonder, for my many years of observing families and spousal relationships among my patients, I sometimes wonder how much of the challenges in their relationships are linked to this misunderstanding of the female physiology. And how this is just not a menstrual cycle thing. This is the cycle of a woman's life. This is the cycles of her life. Her ebbs and flows, her ups and downs are cyclical.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Men have a more regular and constant biology or physiology. Our cycles are much longer and broader. So we don't have the same acuity and sensitivity to the ebbs and flows like female bodies do. So I sometimes, not sometimes, but often over the years, see a lot of misunderstanding from the male side about a female's behavior or her thinking or her language around this cycle. Because men assume everybody is constant. You are a reasonable, nice, sweet person. Then you should be like this all the time, every day. How could you switch on us? Do an about face just within seconds. I think that is very traumatizing for the male psyche. It took me many years to understand this, you know, from a Chinese medical's perspective. You know, the female family members in my family can go through this if, for example, they have what we call blood stasis. They have a blood clot in their uterus when they're menstruating. Then their demeanor and behavior can change dramatically if that blood is not coming out on time. You know, there could be perceptual disturbance, meaning they could hear things much louder
or to than their normal. You know, sometimes they don't even know that. It's like, why are you yelling at me? I'm not yelling at you. I'm just talking nicely. No, you're yelling at me. I just saw a lot of misunderstandings there, a lot of conflicts. And I think they add up in the relationship. When the men start saying, yeah, I can't understand her. She's unreasonable. And she's crazy during those 5 days in the month. Men talk to each other and say, they don't. Yeah, my wife is like that too. I don't understand them. Right? There's so much frustration in there. I think they add up because after years and decades, men just gave up and say, well, she's just like that. Not knowing that there could be solutions, not knowing that there could be better understanding, not knowing that there are many ways, if these problems are resolved in a reasonable way, that their relationships can improve so much, become much better. I've talked to men. These kind of ideas and dimensions of understanding for most men is completely out of their mind. They just couldn't comprehend that this is possible. So there's my, you know, male perspective. And as a practitioner, as an observer, a neutral observer from the outside, I cannot help but come to the conclusion that what we're doing here and what we're doing going forward, doing this education, can be enormously transformative for the world. The impact is immeasurable, whether it's financial, social, psychological, for everyone in the world.
Yeah. I'm right there with you, Leo.
Yeah, I agree.
And another dimension to that is fertility. Because we think of male and, okay, well, we can save this for another conversation.
But you can leave us a little teaser.
Yeah, leave. I'd like to hear what you have to say there.
I'm just thinking that we, just like we ignore the menstrual cycles, we also ignore the larger reproductive cycle. And we think that we can just give women birth control pills and ignore the fertility. And it's a negative thing that women have to worry about getting pregnant. And at the same time, fertility is this huge gift and power. And you mess with the woman's fertility, that's what I tell my daughter, there's a price to pay. And it's not just we take a pill and we become bodies that are no longer in danger of getting pregnant and then you have to get an abortion and, oh my God, because nobody wants to have kids anymore. But fertility is a power, and it is related to creativity. And there is something where physical fertility and spiritual and intellectual fertility intersect and influence each other, and it's a different way of being in the world when you accept and appreciate a body that has reproductive powers, whether you ever want to have kids or not. It's just, if you have that kind of a body, it changes. I don't know what I'm trying to say. I guess I have to think about it some more. But it is an aspect of who I am in the world, that I have a body that has given birth or has the ability to give birth, that affects me once a month and then throughout the cycle. I don't know.
I think I had a sort of a phrase for that. It's fertility is not an on or off switch.
Ooh.
That's what I hear you saying. You just don't turn it, just
turn it on or off. It's not that simple.
Yeah.
It's yeah. a lot. So that would be a beautiful topic to elaborate
for
on
next
in
time.
Our next site. Yeah?
Yes. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of our podcast, Pebble in the Cosmic Pond. As a new experiment in our season 2 on Over the Moon, because we so love these conversations, we have decided to release new episodes not only on the new moon, but from here on out on a bi-weekly schedule. So on the new and on the full moon. We'll see if we can keep it going. The full moon episodes used to just be for the members of my Imperial Tutor Mentorship. But we all feel like this information is too precious to not share it with the general public. If you enjoyed this conversation, remember to subscribe to my newsletter at happygoatproductions.com/connect to get notified of future episodes and other offerings. And if you want access to the more specialized and truly nerdy conversations that Leo and I are having in the Imperial Tutorial, please take a look at my Imperial Tutor Mentorship, which you can find at my website at happygoatproductions.com/imperialtutor. Also, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts and share our work with your friends and colleagues. And if you feel like it, continue the conversation for each episode on our Pebble in a Cosmic Pond Facebook group. Last, but definitely not least, go out there and spread some positive vibrations between heaven and earth. Goodbye.